listening
to the CD Baby.
CD Baby.
CD Baby.
DIY.
Musician.
Musician podcast.
Hey there, and welcome to episode number 274 of the CD Baby DIY Musician Podcast, where on today's episode, we will be discussing how to create the perfect release plan for your music. My name is Kevin Bruner, and joining me is Chris Robley. Chris, how are you?
I'm doing good. I'm a little overwhelmed by all of the things on my own personal release plan for my album. So I think when you set this up by saying the perfect release plan, that should include someone who does all the work for you.
Well, I said the perfect release plan, not the perfect release execution.
Yeah, the perfect plan includes someone else doing all of the work.
Okay. Yeah.
How are you?
Yeah, it's a lot of work. I'm good. You know, before we started this podcast, I was laughing because I'm like, I think I thought of a funny business idea that might actually have legs to it. You know, I put a bunch of concert lighting in my garage.
I have seen on Instagram Reels, yes.
I've mounted it on trusses and everything. And there's a backstory, but I don't think you need a story any more than because it's awesome. And, well, the backstory is I did it from one of my daughter's parties. There's a bigger backstory. But anyway, a birthday party during COVID where you can't go anywhere or do anything with people. But it looks like an awesome stage show, like lighting. And I was out there screwing around taking some photos and video, and I thought, you know what? This would be great to get bands in here to get, like, cool live shots for them, like the up-close live shots that make it look like you're playing really cool gigs, because how many times have you shown up to a gig, and it might even be a good turnout, and the stage just looks like garbage, or it's just all white lights, and it just looks terrible, yeah. And when you're trying to build up some, you know, content that makes it look like you're doing cool stuff, it just doesn't work.
So you're going to return to your roots as, didn't you used to be a band photographer at
yes,
some point?
Yes, I used to do a lot of photography for bands. But so, I thought, because I was messing with a photo I took, I'm like, man, people are going to think I've been playing some cool shows. I'm like, wait a minute, that's all I need is for them to think I'm playing good shows.
Controlling fan perceptions.
That's right. It's all just telling a story. Actually, it would be fun to get if I would have to make a few more little upgrades, but you know, there's time.
Well, honestly, like I know that that's sort of a shtick of yours now, is that you have this garage that you use in that way. But if I'm scrolling through Instagram and I see that, I'm always, I would say, you know, for half a second, kind of fooled. I'm like, oh, Kevin's playing a show. Like it has that effect, like even on me, and I know the whole deal.
So I'm going to be on some really cool stage with crazy lights, and you're just going to be, man, Kevin really just went too far with his garage.
You're playing like Gillette Stadium or something. Oh, yeah. It's just Kevin in his garage.
Yeah, he must have expanded the garage. Anyway, if you would like to see what I'm talking about, you can follow me on Instagram. I'm at K Bruner, and you should follow Chris on Instagram. He's at Chris Robley. He's got new music coming out. I think we're working on a new album. It's in that, can I just get the mixing done stage? And, but anyway, connect with us there.
Yeah.
It's always nice for people to say hi.
And yesterday I just filled out the Spotify direct pitch thing for my first single for my album, which will be out in about a month.
Awesome. Yeah. Yeah. And so in today's episode, we will be discussing some of those things, like what you're just talking about, creating the perfect release plan. But before we get into that, I should mention we have some emails, and Chris, you will not believe that two or three of the emails have to do with live shows.
Interesting. The world is changing.
You're going to want to stick around, even just for if it provides a light of hope. you're going to want to stick around for that. That comes up later in the show. And, you know, if there's something that we talk about that you want to weigh in, or you got a question or comment, you can always call our listener line at 360-524-2209, or you can email us at podcast@cdbabypodcast.com. All right. Well, we should say part of the reason we're having this conversation, one, well, one is we get asked this all the time about specific things related to releasing music. And that led, I think, Chris, it was your idea. Like, why don't we create this release plan generator, something that helps artists understand the relationship between the dates that they want to release music from, you know, from where they are today to that date in the future, and what opportunities exist in that time frame, and what opportunities are going to be challenged or not possible because of the time frame. And so we created this release plan generator. And so if you're listening to this now, you can follow along somewhat at, because we're not going to go through it step by step, but we're going to talk a lot about it. You can check it out at release.cdbaby.com. You don't have to have distributed music through CD Baby. You don't even need a CD Baby account to use this. This is available to any artist anywhere, because we just want to be helpful and help artists understand how to maximize the release of their music.
Yeah, and you're right. It was a point, I think, about a year ago where I was getting tons of DMs from, you know, friends, acquaintances, and people I have just never met, basically all asking some version of the same question, which had to do with, like, when do I need to distribute by in order to, you know, do X, whether that's a pre-save or pitch to Spotify or whatever. And I was like, this is getting really exhausting. Spending all my time in Instagram DMs, like, we should just make something that does this. So now I can just share a link. I don't have to cut and paste answers anymore.
Correct. Again, that link is release.cdbaby.com, and check it out. We're going to talk about some of the highlights. But before we even talk about some of the things that you'll encounter there, I think one of the things that's important to highlight is how the act of releasing music has changed in a streaming world. And what I mean by that is that the idea of releasing music now is an act of music promotion. And the reason I say that is because the platforms, and, you know, a lot of them are driven by algorithms. And if you listen to this artist's previous album, they've got a new album out you might like, you know, things like Release Radar and Discover Weekly. All the platforms have mechanisms to push music to listeners because they want listeners to stay engaged with new music so they don't cancel their subscription. And so Spotify's really led the way with this. I mentioned Release Radar. And we'll talk a little bit about the tools that they offer and how it's important to plan your release to make sure you don't miss out on them. But they'll email your fans. Everybody who's followed you on Spotify gets an email on Saturday. I get mine Saturday morning. I don't know when other people get theirs, but Saturday morning I get an email that has all the releases by artists that I follow. And it's usually about four or five people. And so it's not too many. It's not like it's a giant list where everybody gets buried, but I've even taken screenshots of your releases, Chris, where it was like you, and I forget who it's next to. It's like Coldplay or something. It was some massive artist and Chris. And that's when I got emailed.
And that's my one chance to be on the level with Coldplay.
But those tools are, those things are happening. One, if you plan your release, and two, because they're happening, makes the act of releasing new music promotion, in that it's promoting you, it's pushing you more to more people. And that is a change from what we experienced back in the download era and the CD era. That did not happen. So that's one thing why it's so important to plan your release, because a lot of these things, these mechanisms and these opportunities only happen in the lead up to the release. And once release day hits, they're gone and you can't get them back for that release. So important to know.
And so that's the sort of amazing opportunity that's out there. But somehow we still, as artists, get to this point after we've juggled and stressed so much about making the music that I feel like there's this tendency to just be like, ugh, here it is. Let's just get it out. I don't want to have to do more work or plan. If, you know, there's a million reasons why we rush. And that means we're rushing through like literally the only guaranteed opportunity we have to reach back out to our existing audience. So hopefully this tool and or this discussion of what to do will help us resist that urge to just rush it out.
Yeah. And, you know, it is, I think that's one of the biggest things artists fight with this. It's like, there's the excitement. I'm so excited because if people just hear this, it's going to be huge. I just need to get it out immediately. And that can inadvertently do the opposite, make sure more people don't hear it because you skip some of these opportunities. Or two, like what you said, you're like, that's what I struggle with is just the fatigue. You get to a point and you're just like, man, I've heard these songs a million times. I've lost perspective. I don't even know if it's any good anymore. let's just move on with our lives.
Well, yeah. And then I know we've joked about this a lot in the past, but you know, we have both been guilty of it. We've worked with other artists who are guilty of it where you drop the album. I mean, actually in this context, it's kind of a good word for it. You just sort of drop it in the world and then there it is, it's on the floor and you're like, okay, we did our release show or whatever. We sent our one email to our list. Okay, let's go make another album. You're like, what? No, like don't go back to the drawing board. Now's the time to like push that music.
Yeah. You know, one thing I struggle with, I'm curious to hear if this is something other people think of, or it's just me. The creation process can take a while, especially for a full length album. And so the season of time that I'm working on it, I tend to start thinking about the music around that season and releasing it. Like say I'm like this album we're working on. We recorded a lot of it last summer. And so the idea of releasing it in winter feels maybe that doesn't feel like I was hoping it'd feel. I don't know. I don't know if that's something that other people think of like, oh, this doesn't feel like a winter album, or I don't know. I connected with it during the summer and now I'm releasing it in spring. Does this work or I don't know.
Well, yeah. And then the other thing that happens is you're talking about a release season, and that for you as the artist includes all of that time you spent writing, recording, kind of germinating the idea for branding it and telling the story. And so by the time you're about to tell the story to anyone else, you're either sick of it or you've been inhabiting it for so long that you almost make assumptions that the world knows it, or and like literally that's the point where that story is brand new for everyone else. You can't give up on it the moment you start to tell it to the world just because it's old to you, or yeah, even worse, you kind of think the world has been seeing you that way while you've been making it, but they haven't.
Yeah, that's one of the weird things I think for anybody in any sort of creative process, that when you get to this point of releasing music, you've lost so much perspective. You've lived in it. You've been working on it. I'm sure the same thing happens with movies. You know, even like stage productions or things, it's like by the time you actually start opening it up to other people, you're like, I'm so over this thing. And that's why bringing it back, you need a plan, because the plan not only helps you capitalize and maximize your release and take advantage of some opportunities, it also ensures it brings you back to that perspective and makes sure it kind of is a bit of a accountability check of like, okay, you're right. This is the plan. I need to stick to the plan.
If people want to follow along and they go to release.cdbaby.com, basically like the first thing you're going to do is type in your target release date. And it's going to reverse engineer a timeline, a schedule, and a kind of to-do list with specific deadlines that get you to that point. If you don't have a release date in mind, it's going to give you the earliest possible date that will help you qualify for things. And then, you know, once you're in there, you can print it out as a PDF as well. So you can kind of take it with you when you were talking about accountability.
Yeah. So let's dive into it. So we're going to head over to release.cdbaby.com. I already put in a release date. So it's given me information. Like Chris just said, you're going to put in a release date. And if you don't have a release date, that's okay. We'll just create like a suggested timeline from today. And you can change it, obviously, at any time. This has nothing to do with your actual distribution. This is just for you. It's a tool. It does not inform. It doesn't change anything in your CD Baby account whatsoever. But yeah, so go in there, fill that out. It'll take you to this step of all these items. It's a nice layout. I like the design of this thing. But speaking of reverse engineering, you just said reverse engineering. Let's roll down to the extra credit button at the on the end of the timeline and start there and talk about that at first, because I think a lot of that is some of the things that you should be doing to help this whole release process be more successful.
Yeah, so this is all lumped under extra credit because it's stuff you really kind of should be starting to do as you're making the music still. And one is to document pretty much everything about the creative process. Get photos, get videos, write down really detailed notes about the gear you're using and the people you're working with and anything funny and anything terrible. And like, just write down way more than you ever think you're going to need, because that stuff is going to come in really handy later once the music comes out and you need all these different angles to get back into the same music and to kind of make people care from a new perspective. At that point, you'll have forgotten half this stuff. So the time to document it is during the creation process.
Correct. And, one thing I like to tell artists, and I've done myself, and I've had to tell my bandmates, while we're in the studio, yes, we can post some photos and tell that story. But there's a fine line between giving it all away and telling the story. It may not be that fine of a line. I think it's a pretty obvious line. you don't want to, hey, we've been in the studio for a week, I just uploaded every photo to Facebook today. No, don't do that. You can tell the story of being in the studio, but there needs to be a lot of stuff held on to of the creation process, of all the stuff going on behind the scenes after people hear the music, because it makes more sense. It's more interesting. They have context. And now it's songs they've heard, they've enjoyed, and now they get to see the behind the scenes. This is one thing where artists could definitely take a note from what Hollywood does. They don't release the behind the scenes features before the music, the movie comes out, or
yeah,
the TV show.
That's a good comparison, yeah.
The Mandalorian had an amazing behind the scenes thing that came out after. And it made sense then, because you have seen the show and now it adds fascination and interest in the creation process. And so that's really what you should be doing and thinking about when you leading up as you're recording, as you're writing. What are all the things and story pieces that you can start collecting that will be more powerful after the music is out? You can still tell the story along the way with some photos and things, but it makes more sense after it's out there.
Yeah, well, you just said stories, and that's actually our next item on this list, is figure out what your story even is. While you're making this music, it's the time to kind of figure out what your brand is, and that could be your brand as an artist, but it could also be sort of your latest permutation as an artist. Your music might be going in a different direction or saying something new. So it's the time to really dial in who you are, who your audience is, and if you can distill that into a couple sentences, that's great. That's going to be useful for PR and all kinds of communication around your music. But it also, once you've defined that, it's going to make a lot of other things a little bit simpler too. Like, what should my album art look like? What should my music videos look like? How do I want to talk to my artists on social posts? Like, that stuff kind of falls into place once you know who you are. So now's the time to figure that out.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, one of the things that with a bigger release that's helpful, like you just said, because a lot of times artists think about writing that bio when they're new and then it just kind of sits there and it's old and crusty. But every time you have a bigger release, refreshing all of that, what is the story now? What is, lean into the current place that you are. If you're a band that's been around for a while, this is your 5th, 6th, 7th, 10th release, your bio shouldn't start about, they started in early 2000. No, nobody cares when you started. They know you started. Tell us why we should care about what you're doing now. So I think it's hard because, I've gone on a good bio search before, like looking for other bios that, like, I feel like this artist nailed it. it's hard. I'm talking about like major label artists as well that have people doing this for them. And it's hard to find good ones that you can look at and go, oh, this person updated it to make it make sense for where they are now. But doing that with visuals and all that is important as well.
Yeah. And then just if you're having a hard time kind of, what's the word? Having perspective on your own art and story, you should go back and listen to an episode of this podcast called The Authentic Artist Branding Bootcamp with sort of some exercises. It's like a workshop to help you get there.
Correct.
Let's see. We got a couple other things on this.
Yeah, we can hit real quick. Yeah, go ahead and hit them real quick on the script.
So while you're still kind of finishing up the music, it's probably the time to book your release party if you're going to play in the real world. You know, that's probably a lot more difficult these days with venue uncertainty and such. But there are also, you know, live streaming and Twitter listening parties, all sorts of different ways to kind of have an event, even if it's online, around this release to make it special. But in order to make it special, you're going to want to plan. So plan it well in advance. And the time to do that is sort of before you even get your music into the distribution pipeline.
Correct.
What else? And then the last thing, we've recommended this a lot, but make sure you can get the most out of your recording session. So if you're in the studio, or even if you're recording at home while you still have your session pulled up, go ahead and get more versions of those songs. You want to get an instrumental version, so mute the vocals, burn it without the vocals. That's going to be really crucial for sync licensing. If you can get stems, which are like, you know, consolidated stereo tracks, get those for remixers. If you can do a stripped down version of your mix where you mute a lot of stuff except maybe an acoustic guitar or a synth pad or something in the vocals, do that. And you know, you don't have to overthink it and take a bunch of time, just whatever you can get quickly, because again, that's all stuff that you can use after the release to further just get more windows back to that initial story.
Absolutely. And you know, we could talk a whole lot about all that stuff, but let's move on to what somebody experiences once they put in the release date and how they could properly use this tool to help guide creating their perfect plan, because we said this was about a perfect plan.
Yeah. So we put all the kind of key dates at the very top, and that's because, you know, we want to have the cliff notes of the things that are most asked about. So the kind of short answer is at the very top of this timeline. But as you scroll a little bit down, you can get into the specific details, and there'll be a date or deadline based on the target release date you set. And that really is a kind of like, this is your last chance to qualify for this. With most things, it's way better to get these things done sooner. So the more planning you have, the better. But the guidance that we give is sort of like, this is your last chance for this. The first of those is just when you want to finalize your cover artwork and your master by, which is, you know, we'd say about a month ahead of your release date. If you're going to do a human mastering engineer, give yourself some more time, because if you don't like what they produce, it's going to take a little while to get a second revision or a first revision or a second revision, you know, and that's more time you're going to have to wait. So check out automated mastering tools like Cloud Bounce. And if you're having trouble with album artwork, you can use something like Canva, which is a free design tool.
Yeah, I think you hit on something very important, that these dates that we recommend here are really like, this is the deadline. And the deadline is not the day that you start designing art or start thinking about getting tracks mastered. That's when you've had the art created, made tweaks, decided that this art is good and done. We're ready to roll. Same with your tracks. It is not the date where you start thinking about it.
I tried to suggest that with just the one little word of by the date. So it's like, get your music mastered by this date. But, you know, obviously do it before if you can. And then the next thing on the list is when you need to submit your music for distribution. Again, that's about a month in advance. Not because distribution takes that long from a CD Baby operational perspective. We can distribute things very quickly, but in order to qualify for all these other things we're going to talk about, you want to get it into distribution at least a month ahead of time. And again, if you could do it earlier, that's all the better.
Yeah. The key thing is that, and the idea behind this release plan generator that we're really trying to hone in on is what you just said, that there's optimal date ranges for different activities. And so as somebody does this and goes through this process with this tool, it will tell them, hey, if you're wanting this kind of press, you don't have enough lead time. If you don't, that might be fine. But there are some tools that I would say would be a mistake to not take advantage of. But that's the idea, that there are things can move faster. You know, we get people freaking out all the time. It's Wednesday, they want it up on Friday. And it's like, you're just missing out on so much opportunity. And that's why planning's so important.
Yeah. So then the next thing people kind of have to, well, they shouldn't have to worry about it, but the thing they will want to confirm is that their music has been delivered to these platforms ahead of the release date. So you get it into distribution, you know, about a month in advance, maybe even soon, maybe even earlier. And then once it's finalized, it's going to be sent to Spotify and Apple Music and stuff. They're not going to post it until the release date you set, but it's good that they have it in advance, because that's what needs to happen before you can pitch it to Spotify's editorial team or set up a pre-save or any number of other things. So to verify where and when your music has been delivered, inside your CD Baby dashboard, there's a section called Delivery History. So you can check that to, you know that you're qualifying for the next steps.
Yeah, and once your music has been finalized, it's usually delivered to all the main platforms within 24 to 48 hours. I've seen it where once my music's been finalized, I've had it, you know, listed being delivered to Spotify within the hour. And, you know, all the main platforms get it like pretty quick. So that would include Deezer, because I know a lot of artists listening to this podcast are all over the world. And in some areas, Deezer is a main platform, and one that people are very interested in. And Spotify, Apple Music, Amazon, all those big key platforms get it pretty quickly.
Yeah. Well, so now that's kind of all your distribution mechanics. But the next section we have to talk about is promo preparation. And if you're going to be doing publicity, PR, that's something where we've provided some timelines too. For a national campaign, I would give yourself at least 3 months. I'm working with a publicist now, and we're working 6 months ahead. You know, if you're going to do local press, you could probably get away with a month or two of preparation and warning to those local outlets. But that's definitely something you need to get started way ahead of the release date.
Yeah, and the one that even for like the weeklies, you know, the every major city in the United States, and I've seen these in other countries as well. You know, it's like the entertainment, the, you know, I call them entertainment weeklies, but want people to think I'm talking about entertainment weekly,
art weeklies or local weeklies. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, you may in the past have emailed a week before your release came out and somehow managed to get in there. I would not count on that, because you might have just randomly hit them at a good time where they had something back out or something get moved and they had a gap that they needed to fill for coverage, and you were there, convenient. But most of the time you need like a month or 2 months even for those, just so you can make sure that, you know, they get your email, they get what they need. They can work around their editorial calendar and get you slotted in before something else comes in. So that's why those timelines are there.
That's a good point, though. So you definitely should give advance notice for any of this stuff for press. But it's also worth, if you don't hear back that they're going to give you any coverage, it is worth writing them again the week of, because they do have things slip through the cracks, or, you know, an event might get canceled and suddenly they've got some space to spare for something new. That, so, you know, it is worth checking right before your release comes out, but don't rely on that method.
Correct. Because that's one of those things where you could have some wrong perceptions of, oh, you just have to send them an email on Monday. They'll cover you on Friday. It's like, you might have just gotten extremely lucky because of something fell through and they really had to fill some space really quickly.
Yeah. So let's see. What's next on our list? We've got, it's time to create a show.co account. Once you've created a CD Baby account, you can go in your CD Baby dashboard. There's a button to initiate a show.co account. It's important to do it that way as opposed to going to show.co directly, because if you do that, we'll make you pay. But all these tools we give to CD Baby artists for free. So create your show.co account from within your CD Baby dashboard. And then as long as your music has been delivered to different platforms, you can use show.co's marketing tools to do a Spotify follow campaign or a Spotify pre-save. There's a whole bunch of different things you can do with your show.co account, but now would be the time to do that.
And one of the things I like to highlight here when creating your plan, it's not just a follow campaign or a pre-save campaign. You need to plan on, okay, how do I incentivize these people to do this? Because let's face it, there's no reason for anyone to pre-save anything. It's sort of this weird thing that has started happening in the digital space. I am not concerned that Spotify is going to run out of streams on release day when I go to stream my favorite band's new album. So use this as an opportunity to engage with your fans, not just ask them again to do something that has no benefit for them. You know, the follow campaign could be, you know, depending on how excited or how many diehard fans you have, that one might be a little easier because it's like you can say, hey, make sure that you don't miss any time we release music. But still, I think, you know, the thing I like about show.co the most is it allows you to incentivize your fans where you can give them access to unreleased content if they take action, because show.co allows you to send people, whoever click the, you know, do the thing, follow you or pre-save, it allows you to send them a unique message or to a unique URL where they can get access to something that you can only get to by taking action. So
it's not necessarily just sort of hidden content. You can also do contests and giveaways and stuff like that. So there's a lot of different uses.
Yeah, so that's why I highlight that. It's not just set this up and, okay, I had a show.co follow campaign, nothing happened. It was like, no, the tool is designed to allow you to get creative. And the important thing is, in the lead up to a release, that's where people start getting excited. There's anticipation. It's easier to get them to take action when they're thinking, oh, something new's coming. We love when new stuff is coming. We love anticipating our favorite band's new album or our favorite TV show's new season or all those things. We're wired to like the anticipation. So take advantage of that. Get people excited. Give away some T-shirts if they follow. You know, it's easy to do. But the point with the follow is that it helps drive that release radar. So we're talking about releasing music is an act of promotion in of itself. That's why you're doing these things, because especially the follow, all those people will get re-notified by Spotify on release week when your music is out.
Yeah. And then, you know, we have been focusing on Spotify when we're talking about show.co, but the same tool and the same campaign actually can, how would you say it? Like, it doesn't need to alienate your fans who don't use Spotify, because even though you might be doing a follow or pre-save and follow campaign, someone who doesn't use Spotify can leave their email. You just have to do a kind of a checkbox. And then you have another way to get those people that hidden content, or they can enter your contest as long as they just provide an email. So you can be building your list if those people aren't on Spotify.
Correct. Absolutely.
Okay, so then the next thing you're going to want to do is claim, or if you have already claimed, you want to update all of your profiles on the streaming platform. So that would be Spotify for artists, Apple Music for artists, Amazon Music for artists, your YouTube official artist channel, Deezer Backstage, Pandora Amp, and Next Big Sound. There's probably more that I'm forgetting about, but that's quite a list right there. So make sure you have already gotten verified. In your CD Baby dashboard, we have a kind of a quick verification button for most of those. So get to work. And once you've claimed them all, you'll be able to start using their tools to update your hero image and your bio. And on some of them, you'll be able to feature playlists and a bunch of other stuff that kind of sets you up to just, you know, brand yourself and drum up some excitement around this new music.
Yeah. And this is a good time to do this. That list you just mentioned was lengthy. And I got tired listening, like got exhausted going, man, that's a lot. I'm going to have to take a day off from work to do this. But this is the perfect time to do it when you got a new release, because a lot of these platforms are adding new features for artists all the time. They all have their artist portal now, all the ones that Chris just mentioned. However, Spotify has the most robust set of tools, but I know Amazon's working on some. I know Deezer's probably working on some. I don't know about Apple if they're giving artists. There are things where you can update your profile image. All those things, you can do it, I think, at all of those. So just even updating the profile image to your latest photos that go along with your album, or if there's a theme. But some of these services are adding features like, that allow you to merchandise your music and take advantage of editorial type stuff. So it's good to just keep checking in to make sure you're not missing out on some new feature that they added recently.
Yeah. And then actually the next item on our list I should have lumped into that category, because what you want to do is also get verified with Music's Match. And there's a link on our blog. If you search Music's Match on the DIY Musician's blog, click that link. We'll do a quick verification for you there as well. And what Music's Match allows you to do is get your lyrics onto Amazon Music and a bunch of different platforms, Instagram Reels, Instagram Stories, in such a way where if anyone pulls your music into one of their stories or reels in order to create a video content that has your music, the lyrics will automatically come up and they will be time-stamped. They'll appear at the right moment of the song automatically, which is really cool.
Let's jump down to one more that I think is important to highlight, and that's the Smart Link.
Yeah. You want to skip over this pitch to Spotify, or did we already address that?
Well, let's hit that real quickly to explain, because that is date-driven, and that is one of the key things that this helps people understand.
Yeah, so in order to qualify for Release Radar, or to guarantee that you're going to qualify for that, you have to use their direct pitching tool within Spotify for artists, and you have to do it at least 7 business days before the release date. It's better if you can do it a month in advance, according to many, many people. So the more time, the better. But your absolute last chance is 7 business days beforehand.
7 business days beforehand. And they must have your music in their system.
Exactly.
So you can't be, hey, Spotify, my album's coming out Friday. I haven't distributed it yet, but it will be. It has to be in their system. So they say 7 days. That's from when it shows up in their system. I say 9 days out is what I say. It's on the safe side that it's finalized for distribution. 9 days out, they should have it. It should be in their system. You go use that tool. That guarantees your music is pushed to Release Radar. And which, when someone opens up Spotify on their home screen, there's a Release Radar segment there that has those main new albums that from artists you follow. They'll get an email. There's Release Radar playlists that are auto-generated that take that information. It triggers other things as well. Don't miss this. I don't know why anyone would not plan to use this.
Right. It's an important one.
But let's jump down to Smart Links, because think that's some, we've had questions about this still, where people aren't quite, I've heard the term, don't quite understand what they are. They may have seen them, not really known that's what they were.
Yeah, so at least a day before your release date, you want to set up a smart link. So I guess I'll ask you, Kevin, what the hell is a smart link?
Chris, I'm so glad you asked. A smart link allows you to use one link that will send all your fans to a page where then they can link to their distribution or their music platform of choice. So probably the biggest issue with music promotion now is that our fans are very fractured in where they're listening. You know, 10 years ago, if you sent an iTunes link and a link to buy a CD, you were covered for most of your fans, enough that it didn't matter. The other folks would find their way. But now, you know, we just released some data. It's on the DIY Musician blog. About 40% of artist revenue was coming from Spotify. YouTube Music was growing like crazy. It was like close, I think it was 8%. Amazon was like 10%. Apple Music and iTunes were still a massive chunk. And then places like Deezer. And so fans are listening all over the place. And these links help you use one link, and then the fans can go to the right place. If you're just dropping Spotify links, because everyone talks about Spotify and Spotify playlisting, 60% of your fans might be thinking, I'm not using Spotify. I'm not going to go to Spotify. So these help you solve that problem.
Yeah, and if you use CD Baby for distribution, you will automatically get an email for your own customized smart link through Here Now. And you can click for a preview. It basically builds itself in an instant. You can see what it looks like. And then we'll populate it with those links as your music becomes available in different platforms.
Correct.
All right. We've made it to release date. So your music's out. There's a section called official release date. And this is some things you want to do on the day of your release to make sure your music's properly available, that you update all your web presence and stuff with new links, new bios, all that stuff. And then a list of ways in which you want to share that message with your fans. Then after that, there's a section called follow-up promo, because I think a lot of times, like we said, like people drop their record and they think there it is on the floor, I'm done. So we've got a number of things that you should be doing to keep drawing interest back to this same music. And that's going to take a lot of different ways of reaching people. It's going to take a lot of different types of messages and different contexts in which you can share the same music. So it's sort of a list of steps to keep getting attention for this music now that it's out. Pitching to indie curators, creating a whole bunch of different kind of video assets. And I guess we should also say, in keeping with the last minute deadline nature of this, a lot of this video creation stuff should really be done before the music's out, but it's just here in the timeline as like, okay, now's the time to share it.
They'll still do it. They'll still wait till the last
second. Wait, of course. And then, you know, we've got some advice about, advertising your music, looking at analytics to make decisions about how to optimize your ads or to, you know, even see what music is performing best and where. And then kind of drawing a plan to put out a follow-up single or a supporting single. So a supporting single could be something that kind of retells the same story. It might be a remix or an alternate acoustic mix, something like that. Or it might be that you're just ready to put out your next single or your next album and stuff. So it's sort of the bridge between this release and the next, so you keep the momentum going.
Yeah, it's all in there. And lots of great, helpful information. And the thing I like about the whole release plan generator is it's pleasing to look at. We kept it simple, but there are links to places where you can get deeper information, whether it's from our blog or episodes of the podcast where we go in depth about some of these things. And so it's easy to get a good overview. And then for things that you might want to dive deep into, there's lots of links. And so I think it's a great tool. And even if you've released music many times, just scanning down it is a good reminder of all the things that an opportunity there is for your music, especially when you're, you know, launching something new. There's a lot of opportunity that exists that isn't there when you're just trying to, you know, keep promoting maybe catalog that's been out for a while. So take advantage of it.
Yeah. And just to pat ourselves on the back for a sec, when we looked at the survey, there's a little survey link at the bottom. The first time we looked at the survey results, 100% of the users said they found it helpful, which I was very pleased by. I mean, I thought that would be the case. But now that I've said that, I'm sure some podcast listeners are going to go in and be like, this thing sucks.
Thumbs down.
But, you know, so all that to say, even if what you want to do is just to have a reminder of all the things to check off the list, it's going to be a good thing to refer to, and it's totally free.
Yep. Release.cdbaby.com. Check it out. And when you're ready to release that music, head over to cdbaby.com and we'll help you do it. All right. Well, it's just pleasing to look at. I like the fonts. I like the colors. It just makes me feel good.
You're really complimentary for the look and feel of this thing.
I like things that look good. No, clean, simple design, but, you know, that helps my eye know what to look at. You know, it's nice. It's nice. Check it out. Release.cdbaby.com. All right. Well, we said we have some calls and a call and some emails, and they even talk about live shows. So we're going to get to that. But as a reminder, if you'd like to call or email us, you can call us at 360-524-2209, or you can email us at podcast@cdbabypodcast.com. If you've got a question about a release or creating a release plan, or if you just want to tell us something cool that's happening or another question or want to weigh in on something, feel free to. And here's what we've got today. And like I said, some live show stuff. I was surprised to start seeing this. It almost brought a tear to my eye. All right, here we go. Hey guys, you were asking for experiences getting back on stage. I'm one of the lucky people living in Australia. My band was able to play a show back in December, and a songwriters association that I'm a part of just finished a 4-day, 6-venue festival. It helps that we're in a country town, but the gigs are back in full swing. What I'd caution people about is thinking that COVID was some magic situation that showed people the value of live music and gave them an insatiable hunger for it. Music venues opening back up means that all the other options are open as well, so we're back to competing with other entertainment options, and the old excuses are still there. So don't forget the engagement lessons we learned during various lockdowns. That's what will get the audiences to your shows. I feel like now is the time to really get to work and not rest thinking people magically start turning up because they missed live music so badly. Anyway, last year gave me a chance to finish some projects and start exploring others, and I'm looking forward to sharing what I've worked on with the world. And keep up the incredible work you do with the podcast. Cheers, Clinton. And his web address is Clinton Hoy, H-O-Y, clintonhoy.com.
That's really good perspective and advice, and I needed to hear it because I was actually having a phone call last night with my drummer in Oregon, who is helping me kind of brainstorm and produce, you know, pre-production sort of brainstorming for a release show for this album that, you know, who knows when I'll be in Oregon, maybe the fall, maybe the winter, I don't know, but we're sort of getting the gears in motion, and he's suggesting these venues that to me sound very large. I'm like, wait, can we fill that place? And he's like, oh yeah, man. By that point, everyone's just going to be like really, really ready for live music. And like, people are just going to want to come out and support. I'm like, wait, will they? He's like, oh yeah, believe me. Like, I don't know. Okay, cool. All right. So then now my expectations are tempered.
Yeah, I would agree with Clinton here that here's the thing. There is an element of people that are like, I just want to see a live show, anything. But this has gone on for so long. We're not talking about 2 months. This has gone on for so long that new habits and new patterns have been created. And there's a spectrum of people. There's a spectrum from, I was never concerned about COVID anyway, I would have been going to shows all this time, to, I'm really freaked out, I'm not sure when I'll be able to start mixing with people again. I meet people all across that spectrum, or talk to people all across that spectrum all the time.
To be even more cynical, there might be a segment of people who realized, oh, I actually don't miss going to live shows. I didn't care. I guess I didn't really care all that much. So now I know for sure I don't ever need to go to a club again.
Correct. Well, and also a lot of the clubs aren't going to exist.
I know.
Your favorite club may not be there anymore. And I think Australia, you know, we're not going to talk about different things about how people handled COVID, but Australia and the Southern Hemisphere had the benefit of going into summer, where we were going into winter, that I'm sure helped a lot. But anyway, your favorite venue may not be there. And, you know, in Portland here, you might have been hearing about Portland, that downtown's a bit of a mess. I don't want to go down there at night. There's protests and a lot of rioting happening on a regular basis. And it's the part of town where most of the clubs are was already traditionally a seedy part of town. And it's pretty rough now. And I usually end up going to shows by myself because no one will go with me. And I'm not going down there by myself. I'll just wait. So I don't know that. I think there's a lot of things that people are going to encounter. And so, yes, I think the bottom line is, don't expect, oh, we've got a show, it's going to be packed. However, we have balance to this discussion. Howdy, fellas. I'm Lee Calvin from the band Calvin and the Coal Cars. I wanted to write in regards of reopening of venues. We were lucky to be one of the first bands back at our favorite venue, the Pub Station in Billings, Montana, on March 20th, 2021, exactly 1 year after COVID forced us to cancel our album release show at the same venue. For this show, we played in the main ballroom, which typically has a capacity of 700 to 1,000, but we were limited to selling 102 tickets. The room was divided into pods made from bike racks. Each pod was spaced maybe 8 to 10 feet away from each other. Tickets were sold in packages of 4 and 6, and groups attending were required to stay together within their assigned pod, except for using the bathroom and ordering beverages. Despite only being allowed 10 to 15% capacity, the spacing of the groups made the place feel fuller than it was. And as you know, from the stage, you can't see past the first couple of rows anyway. We were thrilled that the show sold out in 30 hours, and we ended up adding a second show the same night. Everything went off without a hitch. The crowd was obviously excited to see live music again, and for us, it felt amazing to be back on stage. I also wanted to bring up a topic I meant to write to you about many months ago when the subject of drive-in shows was still being discussed. It seemed at the time that folks were getting annoyed with the prospect, and I think there was some misunderstanding about what they could be. We put on a drive-in show on June 19th, 2020, and it was honestly one of the best experiences I've had playing live. We branded the show Flatbed Friday Night to encourage the audience to back their trucks into the parking space and sit in the back. That was well over half of the crowd. While others brought lawn chairs and sat outside their vehicles, we hired professional sound and a 4-person camera crew who were able to project the show on the big screen. This allowed everyone to see the performance from anywhere in the drive-in while listening live, rather than dealing with the delay of using the drive-in speaker system, which plays on your car radio if you've not done that before. We sold nearly 300 tickets, and after we paid for all the crews working the show, ended up losing just a couple $100. But for that $200, we put on a great show and got far more publicity than money could have ever purchased us during normal times. We plan on doing one of these shows every summer since it was so successful and so much fun. Keep up the good work. Love your podcast. Lee Calvin, Calvin and the Coal Cars. I think this is an example of a model email that I like.
What they did, what they achieved, what it cost.
Yes, he actually gave real details, because the whole time I'm reading this, I'm wondering, but did you lose your shirt on it? And then he said, 300 tickets and they lost $200, but it was worth it.
That sounds like an amazing show too.
Yeah. You know, I think to Lee's point, I know on the podcast we kind of poo-pooed the drive-in show. I didn't necessarily think it was a bad idea, like, for what they did. What I was getting irritated with was this sort of air in the industry that, oh, this solved our touring problem. I'm like, no promoter's putting on a show for the average independent artist band, even if you have a big following, because the only ones that can pull that off for anyone to make money, you know, at a larger event is giant artists, and they still can't get enough capacity in there to make it worth their while. That's what, you know, when these were happening last summer, what I was finding a little irritating is the narrative, not the actual idea of the event. This seemed to work out great. They're in Billings, Montana. The drive-in theater is probably more accessible than if it was near a bigger city. Billings is not tiny. I think, you know, if it worked for them, great. It sounds great.
Yeah.
I'd love to know how much it cost altogether.
And I would like to see it, whether there's YouTube footage or pics on Instagram or something. Did he share any of that?
He just said Calvin and the Coal Cars. I bet you can find him on Instagram. The other question I have is, like, these venues doing, like, that venue he mentioned doing normally has a capacity of 700 to 1,000. At 10% capacity, what is the venue getting out of it? Like, are they just, like, what was the ticket situation? Like, they sold 300 tickets, he said, or no, 100 tickets. I'm curious to know what the economics of that was. Did they make any money, or was it, hey, we're going to do this show, we're going to end up with $50, but at least we'll get a show? I'm curious. I'm not saying that from a cynical point of view, or like, was it worth it? I'm just kind of curious, like, what band should be expecting? Like, oh yeah, because the whole time I'm reading that, Chris will know what I'm talking about. I was thinking the Crystal Ballroom.
Yeah.
Like, what is the incentive for the Crystal Ballroom to do a show for 100 people? And how does that work out for the artist? So,
yeah,
lots of interesting things. I love these emails. I'm sitting here thinking, like, running through all the options, but anyway, let's keep moving. Let's go to the call. This might get Chris riled up a little bit.
Okay, good.
Here we go. Here's our one call for the week.
Hi, Kevin. Hey, Chris. My name is Nicole. I've called in before. You guys have helped me out a lot. I am an avid listener, love the show, missed the past couple episodes, so I don't know if you already answered this. Simple question. What on God's green earth is an NFT, and is it something that I can use as a small musician? Can I get in on some of them billionaire bucks? Okay, that's it. That's my whole question. Thank you.
Thanks for the call, Nicole. And we did cover that on the last episode. She may have heard that episode by now. But for those who, Chris, are still confused, the floor is all yours.
Okay. So I love the, can I get in on those billionaire bucks? Okay. So an NFT is a digitally verifiable limited edition file, or it's basically virtual merch. It could be an image. It could be an audio recording, but it's something where ownership is limited, and it's like, otherwise a file could be infinitely replicated, right? But this is some sort of way of wrapping it in protection and saying, no, this is just one of 10 of these special trading cards or whatever. And yeah, I mean, technically, I guess you could get in on that and offer NFTs, but I went on a whole soapbox tirade some point recently and wrote a whole article about it saying, if you're at the point in your music making career where you're still just trying to grow your audience and get them to buy vinyl or a CD or a t-shirt, figure out how to do that better before you, like, spend all this time and cryptocurrency making NFTs and trying to sell those, because, you know, your problem isn't that you don't have a cool NFT. It's demand, creating demand for your music. So that's my more polite take. I think I was a little more snarky last time, but
you were. People liked it though. You got lots of comments on it.
I did. I saw on Twitter all these people being like, "Wow, I like Grumpy Chris."
And NFT stands for non-fungible token, and it uses like blockchain technology. It's like cryptocurrency type stuff. But
yeah, I mean, I guess the cool thing about it is that they can be bought and sold and traded like, you know, something in the real world, like a piece of art or something. And, but with an NFT, if that object, it's not an object, but if that item, that digital item gets sold down the line for more than, well, I guess no matter what it sells for, you as the original creator get a percentage of that sale. So, you know, whether you're stature as an artist increases or decreases, no matter what the value is doing, whether it's going up or down, if it's sold to someone else, you earn a percentage of that, which is pretty cool. But again, is that
how does that money get to you?
It goes into your crypto wallet. From a technical standpoint, I'm dumb. I don't know, but
who verifies that this actually works?
Isn't that what the blockchain does? It just waves its magic
wand.
Who's
watching the blockchain?
Thousands and thousands of distributed computers.
Right. Okay.
So that's one cool thing about it. But yeah, I mean, the other problem I see with it is, if you as the artist are asking what is an NFT, I don't mean that condescendingly.
No, because I had to Google it like 3 weeks ago.
Yeah, and so if we as the artists are like, what is this? Should I get in on it? Imagine what your fans are like. They don't care. They don't know what it is. And so then you have to go through all the work of evangelizing a new technology, a new format, and that's not going to benefit you until the point where there's enough demand amongst your fan base, demand and I guess knowledge and familiarity. So I think you'd have a much easier time just taking a Venmo or a PayPal payment for, you know, putting someone's name in the liner notes of your next album for $1,000. Like that is probably a more realistic monetary goal than minting an NFT and then trying to sell that for $1,000.
Yeah, newsflash, you'll have an easier time selling CDs to your fans in 2021 than you will selling NFTs to your fans who don't know what the heck you're talking about. To me, this is one of those things where I can't tell if this is a gimmicky fad that will be gone as fast as it came. You know, whenever you have a gimmick, there's always somebody, like one or two people that benefit, a bunch of people that jump in, and then the thing either lives or dies. And it finds like real purpose and value for the long haul. The thing that you mentioned about getting paid is interesting to me because it's like, you know, that went back when I was in my college years and would go to used CD stores all the time. That at that same time, there was a lawsuit that happened and where the major labels were suing because they weren't getting royalties when those albums resold. Of course, they lost, but it is an interesting idea that something gets sold, you get paid again. But in a streaming world, I don't know why anyone would be selling anything. So it's like, I don't know. To me, the mystery is like these... Planet Money, it's a great podcast that NPR does, did an episode about this, and it had to do with like digital art. And the digital art that they sold for $68 million was freely available on the internet, the exact same things. And it really was just this billionaire wanting to basically, it was like for you know, his ego to say he owned almost like a piece of the internet. I'm like, is this one of those things where these billionaires are going to basically, without us knowing, buy up everything on the internet and then say they own it and then shut it down or make us pay? I don't know. It just felt like buying air and then saying, you got to pay me to breathe.
Yeah. Well, and for an artist at our, you know, level where we're doing a lot of the work ourselves, it leaves us in a position where we have to decide, will our NFTs that we create be truly limited, Like as in, am I going to put out a song that only exists in this NFT format and is never going to be on Spotify? Or is the song also going to be on Spotify? And then we hope people are just interested in this kind of like, you know, the digital equivalent of like a limited edition hand signed version of a song everyone can hear on Spotify. Anyways, it seems like a weird choice, because if we create a great song, at this point in our careers, it's better for us to have everyone hear it and put it on Spotify, as opposed to this separate manufacturing line or whatever, separate output that only gets limited, which is, you know, something you can do once in a while, but is not really sustainable for most DIY musicians.
This feels similar to me to when Twitter announced that you could sell stuff. People went crazy. I was at a music tech conference, a very popular one, and with somebody who had high reputation in the music tech space. We were both were being interviewed together on the same podcast, and the interviewer asked us, what do you think about Twitter enabling people to buy on Twitter? And this person that was with me with high reputation said, it is an absolute game changer for the industry. Everything will be bought and sold this way. And they said, Kevin, what do you think? I said, nobody cares. They do not use Twitter to go shopping. This will not be a thing. Nobody cares. No artist will do this. I've seen some, I saw some popular artists do it. The experience was confusing, and I don't want to accidentally at somebody and find out I bought something for $1,000. That's, nobody cares. And I think we know how that all ended. And so it's just funny that sometimes tech people get so excited with their little creation that they lose sight of whether or not people, it really has value. It's like, it's a solution looking for a problem, and the problem,
exactly, yes,
they're trying to convince us is a problem. And I'm like, that's really not a problem for me. So,
well, so this is one of those things. I might eat my words in 5 years if NFTs become so commonplace and they truly revolutionize everything and, you know, solve all musicians' problems. I don't see that happening, because what you said, they seem to be the solution for problems that don't exist for most artists at the DIY level. They may be great for, you know, wildly famous artists. They may be great for other aspects of the business, but that's the biggest thing to me. And I feel like in some ways it kind of, again, I could eat my words, but this feels like an instance where it almost pays to be dumb. I'm not a techie. I kind of don't get it truly. Like, I get it, but I don't care enough to get it, 'cause I'm just like, whatever. And I, again, could be wrong. I think I'm right. I think it might be the similar thing to the Twitter story you have of, in 5 years, no one's going to be talking about this.
Well, and I feel like right now there's this, the story is, ooh, I did this thing called NFTs and I provided this unique content. I feel like in a little bit, there's going to be maybe seller's remorse. Like, that really cool thing I said I would only be available to these 100 people that paid decent for it. But I want everybody to have it. Mm-hmm. I could make a whole lot more money continuing to sell this. And that was a great idea. And now that idea is locked in. That was dumb. And I'm not big enough. You know, people were doing it maybe to support me. I did it instead of fundraising, like a crowdfunding thing, or it was my crowdfund. So I could see there being a lot of like, wait, what did I actually just do? So we'll see. We'll see. That was about 10 minutes more talk about NFTs and I care to have.
we need to have an official NFT what's the term, moratorium.
Yeah. But the music business loves to have something that they think they can get excited about because it's the future. But they sure couldn't get on board with streaming. That's weird.
So, someone asked, I gave this talk at a college music business class about a month ago, and one of the students wrote me like a very kind thanks email and asked sort of some advice for pursuing a job in the music business, and I kind of wrote them a response with like 5 or 6 points, and one of them, that my concluding point was something like, you're gonna learn pretty quickly that there's a whole bunch of people that love to hear themselves talk. And, you know, I like to hear myself talk, so I'm not not outside of that. But talking heads that use the jargon and the lingo of, you know, B2B solutions and like scalable this, blah, 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 verticals. And like, I'm like, it's, just talk like a fucking human being. Excuse my French. And I said, what you have to remember is that all that language exists to intimidate you. It's supposed to make you feel like you don't get something or whatever. And really, everything that anyone ever talks about this in music can and should be condensed to an artist wants to reach a listener, make them care, and fall in love with the artist. And everything else is just how and when and where. And all of that is ever changing. And so people get wrapped up in the how and the when and the where. And that stuff is important, like tactically. But I feel like there's a weird inversion of what's important in how people talk about the industry. They get so wrapped up in the terminology and the platforms and stuff, and they forget what it's all about. And so anyways, this was just my last bit of advice of like, don't be intimidated by that, because most of it's just utter bullshit. And if you always remember what artists truly want, you're going to be on the right path. And to the degree that you don't understand any of this stuff, don't be afraid to admit that. Just ask questions. Like, that was my advice. Anyways, I just went on another rant.
Our ratings just went up.
And the explicit warning went up as well.
Wow. Interesting thing, you know, I know exactly what you're talking about. And that's part of the reason why we started our own conference at CD Baby, because I got so tired of going to conferences and hearing people talk that knew the buzzwords, but had never. Here's my filter. Has this person ever written a song? Has this person ever recorded anything? If not, they don't know a massive, massive chunk of the story. They don't know the motivation of an artist. They are somebody that might be good at taking a product to market, but they are just spewing buzzwords is easy, and you can read a book and do it by the end of the day and sound very like you know what you're talking about. But actually producing something, writing and recording that something that people care about and moves people is something altogether different. And that is far more powerful. So don't let those people intimidate you with their fancy words, their NFTs. Nobody cares. Go write a song that people want to sing. All right. We still have more. We got more emails.
Okay.
I think we've got two quicker ones. We can get through them. Hey, Kevin and Chris, love the podcast. You guys are lifesavers. I feel inspired every time I listen. Thank you. I have a question for brand new bands artists. How should you time your first releases in relation to your first live shows? I started a 3-piece folk pop band a few months ago. My bandmates and I have been musicians all our lives and performed in various contexts, but never in our own band. We've been steadily writing original tunes, and initially our goal was to focus on recording music and release an EP following a single, given the uncertain times. However, the rapid increase in vaccinations. We live in Denver and they're now vaccinated. It looks like a first show will be possible much sooner than we expected. We'll likely be ready for socially distanced gigs at coffee shops, etc. this summer, and hopefully real bona fide house shows will be safe soon after. We're definitely going to release a single before an EP per your advice, but generally speaking, should we start out by focusing on getting shows or focusing on recording the EP? Excuse me. On one hand, trying out these songs live seems crucial to get feedback and build buzz for the release. But on the other, I imagine we wouldn't want to play too many shows without having music that people can go home and listen to. He said, for additional context, we all have day jobs. Thank you so much, best Daniel. Chris, what do you think? Should they wait to release the EP after they've done some shows, or...
It's a really good question. I don't think I have an answer for. Did they say whether they have anything available? Have they put a single out?
They don't. They haven't.
I mean, I guess that would be the middle ground, obvious answer. Put something out. And even if it's not the big EP that you want to really make an event out of, just get a single up there. That way, when you're playing shows, you have something you can drive people's attention to. You can start building a Spotify following. You can start building, you know, your YouTube subscribers, whatever it is. And then that audience will be there when you finally do put the EP out.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. And, you know, I don't know all their plans, but to me that if they're going to be playing shows, it might be good to get a few under their belt, and then it has something to point to. Unless they've got a, you know, a giant batch of songs they've been writing, and this EP will be quickly followed by more singles and an album, or what, that would potentially change my thoughts. But having something out there so people can follow you at those platforms like Spotify, and also having something officially released makes it easier. Like, you can send a link to a club booker or something like that. It makes it easier. They see, oh, you've got music out. Okay. We got an EP coming out. Okay.
My dog is agreeing with you.
I thought can that was him? You barking, Chris.
Yeah. Well, I was going to just say one thing. Maybe this is obvious. Maybe they're already doing it. But like the old fashioned thing of building your email list or capturing, you know, mobile numbers or whatever, do the things you can do at the show to build that audience that way. So no matter what you do with your release music, you can get back in touch with those people. Cause you can't always assume they're going to be at your next show.
Correct. All right. We've got one last email. Hello, Rainey here from Joe Gunn. Love the podcast and almost caught up from the beginning. Was very interesting to relive the demise of MySpace all over again. And then he said, hey Tom, miss you, buddy. I was wondering if anyone else had this experience having a video flagged by CD Baby, claiming that the song I had posted on YouTube was similar to one that they had posted for one of the artists that they distribute. When in fact, aside from also featuring a bass guitar, the two songs were nothing whatsoever alike in any aspect. His was a country ballad and mine was sort of bluegrass jug band thing with whistling as the lead instrument. A small washboard, jaw harp, and about half as long. Fortunately, I wrote it as a silly little clickbait song, so was not too concerned about it. That being said, with these glaring differences, I'm sure I couldn't have been the only person that this has happened to, and possibly to a song that they actually cared about. Keep up the great work. We indies truly appreciate it. Rainey of Joe Gunn. And he mentioned he'd be happy to send links to both songs. It's one thing that Rainey doesn't mention specifically, which would be helpful in to know, but it sounds like that song isn't distributed through CD Baby. Sometimes there are some erroneous tagging. This is why it's important for you to check out your YouTube videos on a regular basis. And we can fix that for you if it happens. The content ID system is not perfect. And for whatever reason, sometimes it picks up on things and it thinks they're the same, whether it might be a melody that's similar. But I don't know. This sounds very, very different. So I without hearing them or seeing them, it's hard to know what could potentially be happening here.
Yeah.
So if this is happening to you, you can contact us. Like, there's a way on in your CD Baby account to file a ticket, or if you're not using CD Baby, which sounds like you may not, you can still email us and we can fix it.
I would say about that email, I'm intrigued to hear this song with the whistling and the washboard and jaw harp and all that. Doesn't answer the question, but I'm intrigued to hear the music.
Well, just search Joe Gunn.
Okay.
With two N's. All right. Well, sorry we couldn't be a little more help on that one. Without seeing them and looking at the data, or there's a whole bunch of stuff that could cause tags to happen. Chris and I are not experts in this area, but there are people at CD Baby that are. So if you send them the info, they can work it out. But it's good to always log into your account. I have seen major labels claim some of our songs. I've seen lots happen. So the system is not perfect, but we can help fix anything if there's an issue.
Yes, indeed.
All right. Well, if you have any questions, comments, or want to weigh in on something, the return to live shows, your love of NFTs, you can call our listener line at 360-524-2209, or you can email us at podcast@cdbabypodcast.com. And I think that's going to do it, Chris.
That's it. See you next time. And in the interim, we expect everyone to go to release.cdbaby.com and print out their release plan. Not print it out. Just get a PDF.
Yeah. You can print it out if you're someone who likes to hold the tangible printout. There's people that do that. But, go there. It'll help you understand your options and the opportunities. And even if you've been releasing for a while, there'll be things on there you're like, oh, yeah, I got to remember to do that. So it's very helpful. And with that, I think that brings us to the end, Chris.
See you next time.
All right. See ya.
You've been listening to the CD Baby DIY Musician Podcast, broadcasting from Portland, Oregon, USA.